The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, your radio home for NPR news and programs like Morning Edition since 1985. And this is Ozarks at Large for Monday, July 10th, 2017. I'm Kyle Callums. A pair of cities on opposite sides of our listening area want residents to offer thoughts and opinions about the future of parks. The city of Alma will host its final public meeting Wednesday in a cycle of meetings dedicated to the future of outdoor parks and trails in Alma. Wednesday's meeting, 5 to 7 at the Alma Performing Arts Center. And Bentonville Parks and Recreation will be considering the future of Old Tiger Park on Tiger Boulevard a week from tonight, beginning at 6. The meeting will be at Old Tiger Park. Purpose, to identify potential recreation priorities for the renovation of the space. You can learn more at playbentonville.com. Ahead on today's show, a bit of play and hard work that took place in Bentonville and Rogers this weekend. Zuzanna Sitek explains what the bicycles were doing in close quarters, sometimes under the lights, in Benton County. And later, Becca Martin Brown from Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette gives us more than just a few things to do before August arrives. First, summer is heating up and vacation season is in full swing. The Arkansas Health Department is confirming yet another debilitating illness being spread by ticks in Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
In 2009, two Missouri farmers landed in the hospital with a mysterious tick-borne illness. Both men survived. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention named the disease the Heartland virus because it's spreading through America's heartland. 20 cases confirmed so far, including one in northwest Arkansas, have resulted in one death. Dr. Susan Weinstein, state public health veterinarian with the Arkansas Department of Health, says those bitten get really sick.
It's a flu-like illness with fever, achiness, muscle achiness, joint achiness, and going off your food, not having an appetite. Heartland also seems to have diarrhea and sometimes nausea associated with it.
The Heartland virus is transmitted by a particular tick.
Yeah, the tick is the Lone Star tick, which is one of our most common ticks in this part of the country. It is very common. It's easy to recognize because it's got the adult, at least, has a white spot on its back. And we've got lots of Lone Star ticks here. So we've got the right environment, and there have been cases of Heartland in states around us. So we weren't surprised to get a case. We've kind of been waiting for our first case.
Lone Star ticks also carry bacteria, which cause Rocky Mountain spotted fever, one of the most prevalent tick-borne diseases in the state. But unlike other tick illnesses, the CDC has not yet developed diagnostic or treatment protocols for the Heartland virus, Weinstein says.
Heartland is diagnosed only through CDC right now. As a new disease, there isn't a commercial test available, and so CDC is doing a study in order to validate the tests that they have developed and get them working just right so that it can be standardized and then, you know, hopefully be made commercially available. It will have to pass FDA approval. And so one of the reasons there aren't that many cases yet is because there isn't a commercial test right now. So it all has to go through a local health department and then to CDC. And CDC has set some pretty strict criteria so that they can make sure that this study is accurate.
When a commercial test becomes available, Weinstein says, more cases will likely be confirmed by officials. The Arkansas Department of Health is advising residents to use tick repellents, avoid brushy and wooded areas, and perform regular tick checks to avoid getting sick. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Each human cell contains about 3 meters, or nearly 10 feet, of DNA. To contain all of that genetic material, our cells wrap the DNA around certain proteins in an organized fashion, and when our cells need to access that genetic material, a process called protein acceleration occurs to unpack some of that genetic material. But protein acceleration isn't limited to DNA, and one University of Arkansas researcher is studying the process, and it could result in better-tasting beer. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis explains.
For several decades, scientists have known about the existence of DNA. They've also known that DNA is wrapped around a specialized protein called a histone. But Jeff Lewis, a microbiology researcher at the University of Arkansas, says that presents a problem.
There are genes there that need to be expressed, and that means that other proteins need to actually bind to the DNA in order to turn those genes on, and they can't do that if those histones are there.
Negatively charged DNA is attracted to the positively charged histone proteins, but that attraction can be reversed temporarily by protein acetylation.
When you actually acetylate the positive lysine amino acids on those histones, you neutralize that charge, and now it doesn't bind as tightly to the DNA. And that actually allows then the proteins that are turning genes on and off to actually access the DNA.
Jeff Lewis says that the process of protein acetylation occurs when a small molecule, known as an acetyl group, bonds to an amino acid in a given protein. But the process is reversible, and an acetyl group can detach and leave a protein in its original state. Researchers initially thought that the process only occurred in proteins involved in DNA replication. But technology has improved, research has continued, and scientists have discovered thousands of proteins within human cells that can be acetylated. Although researchers know this process is going on, they don't know exactly what it's doing. That's what Jeff Lewis hopes to find out. He says his current research project, which has been funded by a multi-year National Science Foundation grant worth more than $500,000, started with a simple premise.
Maybe some of these proteins that are being acetylated, the purpose of that is to turn those proteins on or off at different times. And one of the times that maybe the cell wants to turn those on or off is during stressful conditions.
Lewis says the model organism in his research is yeast, single-celled organisms that are found typically near sugars throughout nature. He says that in nature, microbes can't escape stressful environments, so they have to be able to withstand changing temperatures or other conditions that would threaten the cell, particularly during the lengthy process of creating new proteins.
Our thought was, well, there has to be some sort of pre-existing stress defense proteins that the cell doesn't want those on all the time because those things consume energy. The cell doesn't want to waste energy. So this acetylation, maybe this is like an on and off switch.
After initial experiments, Lewis found that by adding inhibitors to a cell that prevent it from reversing protein acetylation, cells became extremely sensitive to heat stress. Going forward, his research will look at which proteins are being modified during heat stress and how those proteins help a cell survive stressful conditions. But as part of his new research grant, Jeff Lewis is developing a brewing class in conjunction with Core Brewing Company in Springdale. He says the focus of the class will be to explore how yeast responds to stresses during the brewing process and how those responses impact yeast performance and the flavor profile of the finished beer.
All of the different interesting flavors that we get from beer are all coming from metabolic processes that the yeast are doing. And some yeast strains make a lot of different sort of fruity esters. And they're doing that because they're turning those genes on at different times than other strains that don't make those compounds.
David Lewis says if scientists can better understand how yeast genes are regulated, like the ones that make buttery or fruity tasting compounds, it could be possible to design new yeast strains with different flavor profiles. He says within the beer experiments, he'll be looking for other traits important to brewers, such as how quickly the yeast converts sugars into alcohol.
We can measure that. We can measure if they're really stressed, they're not going to actually make that much alcohol. What they're going to make is certain stress protectants, certain compounds that they protect the cell, but they don't necessarily taste very good. And they certainly aren't improving the brewing.
He says attention will also be paid to how clumpy the yeast become during the fermentation process.
Really clumpy yeast are easier to filter, but that also influences whether they ferment at the top or they ferment at the bottom, and those have different influences on the flavors that come out of the beer.
But even though his research could result in more understanding about how to craft a tasty beer, David Lewis does recognize that there could be greater implications from his research into protein acetylation, particularly as it relates to humans.
During different types of diseases, our cells are exposed to different stresses. So during heart attack, during stroke, we're exposed to brief periods where we don't have enough oxygen, and then we return oxygenated blood, and that's a stress to the cell. We purposefully, when we're trying to fight off infection, heat shock things. And we have to deal with differences in temperature. There are different chemicals that we ingest that can impose stresses.
David Lewis says understanding how human cells respond to stresses, both when healthy and when reacting to a disease or sickness, is important in understanding how stress impacts both health and disease.
If we find certain proteins that we think are important and potentially part of conserved stress responses all the way through humans, is we can test some of what we find with our collaborators that work with human cells and see if some of these things are more broadly applicable.
Jeff Lewis says there's also interest in his research about cellular stress response from the agriculture field, particularly when it comes to developing drought-resistant plants. He says if researchers can understand how plants respond to heat stresses, and if some of those processes are regulated at least in part by protein acetylation, it could lead to the creation of more stress-resistant plants. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
And ahead on today's show, 60 years ago, a simple phrase, "Open the door, Richard," was part of the pop culture lexicon. In fact, it was so ubiquitous, some radio stations implored comedians and singers to just stop using the phrase in routines and songs. Part of the craze can be traced back to Arkansas's own Louis Jordan.
Well, he don't know who he's throwing out of his joint. I go back in his joint and bust it down to the ground. Open the door, Richard! Hey, Richard!
How and why a now-forgotten four-word phrase became standard vocabulary in the 1940s, and its Arkansas connection, ahead on today's Ozarks at Large.
Many of us have trouble turning off our smartphones, but for some people, the internet is just as addictive as drugs.
Their brains start looking like those of someone who has a substance use disorder. Similar pathways seem activated.
The science behind internet addiction and what it means for adolescent brains, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 3 to 6 on 91.3.
The Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society presents the 19th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series. Kansas City jazz vocalist Lisa Henry and the Claudia Burson Quartet will open the season Saturday, July 29th, and jazz guitarist Alex Wentz and his trio performs Six Strings, Six Stories, tracing the lineage of the jazz guitar, August 19th. KUAF.com or digjazz.com for tickets. Support for 91.3 comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring large private companies in the current edition, plus local business news in Northwest Arkansas. This edition and subscription information available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com.
We're hitting that part of summer when the weather forecast is pretty straightforward. Clear tonight with lows in the lower 70s, sunny tomorrow, and hot. Highs tomorrow around 90 in northwest Arkansas, lower 90s in the Arkansas River Valley. Heat index readings tomorrow afternoon around 102 for the River Valley. It was in this week in 1861 that Anton Arensky was born. I bring that up for two reasons. First, the composer's birth is an opportunity to remind you that classical music can be heard on 91.3 KUAF beginning at 8 p.m. every Sunday through Thursday. First, with Of Note, hosted by Katie Hendrickson, then with music selected by Peter Vandegraaff to take us through the rest of the night. We also mention Arensky's birth date as a reminder that on this Thursday's edition of Daily Ozarks at Large, we'll have another tour of the past with our incomplete guide to this week in history. And this week, one of the most sensational and forgotten stories of crime and abuse in Arkansas history. We'll learn more about the case of Helen Spence and why there's an effort for her pardon nearly 85 years after her death. And bringing us all back to our birthday composer, Anton Arensky, born this week in 1861. This is Arensky's Suite No. 3, as performed by the Moscow Symphony Orchestra, a selection pulled from our Malcolm Hayward Music Library at KUAF. More classical music tonight, beginning at 8 on 91.3 and around the clock on KUAF3. Arkansas is now accepting applications for marijuana licenses, both to grow it and to sell it. Of course, it's still a controlled substance under federal law. Today, we begin a two-part examination of the federal government's prohibition of marijuana with the help of John Hudak, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and the author of Marijuana, A Short History. He recently talked with Bobby Apazon from Arkansas Public Media.
John, I want to begin at the beginning. When did marijuana become something that the federal government had to take an interest in?
Well, marijuana has been present in the United States, or I should say the land that is now the United States, since before the founding. It was grown by British farmers in the United States and has a pretty storied history in the U.S. Marijuana, as we think of it today, has been around in sort of the crosshairs of the federal government since the early 20th century, and that ramped up pretty significantly from the 1930s forward.
But in 1937, the federal government passed the Marijuana Tax Act. So as recently as the 1930s, it was not illegal to have marijuana, to get marijuana.
That's right. And in fact, the letter of the law in the Marijuana Tax Act did not make marijuana illegal. It simply said that you could get marijuana for medical use, which throughout the history of the United States, you could. Cannabis was used for medical purposes in the U.S. That you could get marijuana for medical use if a prescribing doctor could get a tax stamp from the United States Treasury and then begin doling it out. The challenge, while the letter of the law said that, the administration of the law was different, and that is the Treasury wouldn't give out any tax stamps, making it effectively illegal to have marijuana in the U.S.
So in the early 30s, the federal government reconsiders prohibition, revokes the 21st Amendment, and it was supposed to be, you know, curtains for the Bureau of Prohibition and an assistant commissioner named Harry Anslinger. Tell us about him.
That's right. Harry Anslinger began to run a unit in the federal government that was focused on illegal drugs. That is, he moved over from the Bureau of Prohibition and began to focus on drugs of all kinds. But he had a particular focus on marijuana, and it grew out of this idea that it is an evil within society, that it was something that was racialized, that it was something that was used by Mexicans and by African Americans. What began as a drug among Mexican immigrants, particularly in the American Southwest, became a jazz drug. That's how it was explained in the 1930s.
One of Anslinger's foils, albeit kind of briefly, is a name today most people probably associate with an airport, but he was the mayor of New York City, Fiorello LaGuardia. As mayor, he commissioned a report on the ills of marijuana, and it became the LaGuardia Report. I mean, it was a real contrast to Anslinger's, I don't know, militarism, you might call it, right?
It absolutely is. Fiorello LaGuardia commissions the New York Department of Health to conduct a study in real response to Anslinger's claims about the prevalence of marijuana, its addictive properties, and the problems that it's causing in society. Anslinger had a knack for making up statistics, making up media reports, hyperbolizing certain events and activities, and that focus on New York irked LaGuardia. And so he begins this study to see what the problem really is like, not relying on Washington's explanation, but trying to use the New York City Public Health Department to focus on this. And what LaGuardia finds is that most of the characterization of marijuana use, particularly in his city, is a lie, that its prevalence is not as high as is being reported, that marijuana is not as addicting as the federal government would like you to believe, and most importantly, that marijuana was not causing the type of psychotic violence that the federal government was claiming. There were claims literally in newspapers every day, in speeches by political officials, and even in testimony before Congress about marijuana causing insanity, causing people to commit murders and rapes, causing women to be promiscuous. And that was the thrust of LaGuardia's pushback against Anslinger and others like him who were putting false information out to the public.
And tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, we'll hear the second part of the interview that examines the baby boomer generation and public opinion about marijuana. Arkansas Public Media is a statewide reporting project funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and public radio stations across Arkansas. For the complete interview with John Hudak, you can visit arkansaspublicmedia.org.
On the next Fresh Air,
I've been strapped in, you know, physically, to point shoes, strapped into a leotard and tights for my whole entire life.
Wendy Whalen, former principal ballerina with the New York City Ballet, reflects on what it was like to retire after nearly 30 years with the company and start a new life. She's the subject of a new documentary, Restless Creature. Join us.
Fresh Air, twice every weekday on 91.3 KUAF at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Early voting continues today in some northwest Arkansas areas for formal elections taking place tomorrow. Among the decisions to be made, whether Avoca and northern Benton County will have Sunday liquor sales, if the Beaver Lake Fire Department will have more money to staff the fire station 24/7, and if Taneytown will have a new 3/4 of 1% sales tax to construct a water line connecting to the Benton-Washington County Regional Public Water Authority. The Arkansas Department of Education has received largely favorable feedback on a draft plan for its implementation of the Every Student Succeeds Act, a nationwide replacement for No Child Left Behind. Arkansas Public Media's Sarah Weitz-Kotacek has more.
More than 3/4 of the respondents said overall the plan lays out a clear vision for the state. 114 commentators, mostly educators, agreed the goal to get 90% of students scoring proficient on state exams by 2020 is doable. The Every Student Succeeds Act gives states more control and de-emphasizes standardized testing. Arkansas plans to rate its schools with a simplified A through F grading system, and rather than basing those grades on students' test scores, kids' improvement over time will be weighed as half of a school's grade. The Arkansas Education Association applauds the move away from testing, while other groups like Disability Rights Arkansas say they're worried the new evaluation method might downplay the needs of the lowest performers. Arkansas has a September deadline to submit the plan to the U.S. Department of Education. Sarah Weitz-Kotacek, Arkansas Public Media.
The University of Arkansas will host almost 150 Native American, Alaska Native, and Hawaiian students this month for a conference devoted to agriculture. The 4th Annual Native Youth in Food and Agriculture Leadership Summit opens on the UA campus this week and will last for 10 days. The summit will include lectures from visiting speakers, workshops, and more. The summit is sponsored by the Indigenous Food and Agriculture Initiative at the University of Arkansas School of Law. A Springdale company is seeking 50 new workers to staff its expansion. South Coast Baking will host a job fair tomorrow at the Doubletree Club Hotel from 10 to 4. Applications and interviews will be part of the session. The jobs are described as full-time, permanent positions, and job recruiters are bilingual. Many of the positions do not require the ability to speak English. The job fair is tomorrow from 10 to 4 at 4677 West Sunset in Springdale. The Arkansas Arts Council is seeking nominations for the 2018 Governor's Arts Awards. The annual awards honor artists, patrons, educators, and corporations for their contributions to the arts community. The deadline for nominations is August 4th, and the nominees must be current Arkansas residents or Arkansas-based entities. More information is available at arkansasarts.org. A state legislative panel Friday allowed a prohibition on the sale and use of a pesticide that's caused widespread damage to row crops. A subcommittee of the Arkansas Legislative Council took no action on the proposed 120 ban on dicamba. That clears the way for the state plant board's decision to take effect. Farmers across East Arkansas have filed hundreds of complaints linked to the pesticide. Dicamba kills pigweed and is applied to genetically tolerant soybeans and cotton. University of Arkansas weed scientist Ford Baldwin told lawmakers Friday there are no easy ways to fix the chemical's problems of drifting onto non-tolerant crops.
That's why simple sounding things like, well, let's just change and we're only going to spray between certain hours, or we're going to require hooded sprayers. I mean, I'm all about anything somebody wants to try, but that's not going to fix the problem that we're dealing with.
Arkansas farmers have planted 3.5 million acres of soybeans this year. It's been estimated that only a third of that acreage is dicamba resistant. Baldwin says there is evidence that non-tolerant soybean yields could be reduced 25% to 50% if they're contaminated with the chemical. The state of Missouri also issued a temporary ban on dicamba on Friday.
With the Department of Arkansas Heritage, I'm Mark Christ of the Arkansas World War I Centennial Commemoration Committee. 100 years ago, on July 23, 1917, the Arkansas Gazette announced that Fort Logan H. Roots would be abandoned as a training camp in August, eclipsed by the larger base under construction at Camp Pike. Fort Roots had just been designated a training camp for officers in May, and W.B. Smith of the Little Rock Board of Commerce announced that the board tomorrow will start action to endeavor to hold the camp. A day later, Major General Leonard Wood protested the closing of Fort Roots and another camp, saying, "Both officers and men should be trained in southern camps to produce the highest efficiency in the new Army." Despite those efforts, the training mission at the 1896 military base on Big Rock and North Little Rock would be moved to other locations. Fort Roots would serve other uses during World War I, including being the mustering point for some Arkansas National Guard units before they went overseas, and as an influenza hospital in 1918. It still houses a Veterans Administration hospital today. To learn more, visit ww1arkansas.com.
It is Monday, July 10th, 2017. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
So we do like three different calendars in What's Up monthly.
And What's Up is the tab that you can find inside the Friday edition of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Also find it online.
One of those is the Best Bets calendar that happens on the first Friday of the month and just looks ahead at that month because there's so much now. Mm-hmm. There's so much. You need to plan ahead.
Sure.
And the original premise of What's Up was things happening that weekend. It's a little more complicated than that now. So here are some things going on the rest of July. On Wednesday, it's the Summer Gods Tour with Third Eye Blind.
This is at the Amp?
At the Amp. Tickets start at $30. On Thursday, there's a 1-2-3 Andres concert at Crystal Bridges at 7 o'clock. It's for kids. His recent album called Arriba Abajo won the Latin Grammy for Best Children's Album in 2016.
Cool.
And it's free. On Friday, Kiss Me Kate opens at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale.
That's right.
On Saturday, it's Third Saturday at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale with Teresa Griffith, who is going to demonstrate pottery at 10 o'clock.
Like with a potter's wheel or
yeah.
something? Oh, okay.
Also on Saturday, Firefly Fling at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks with shaky bugs and glowing games and fire dancing and all sorts of fun stuff. It's $5 to $15 at the gate. Also Saturday night, Hank Williams Jr. at the Amp. On the 17th, Drum Corps International is at Tiger Stadium in Bentonville.
Have you ever gone to a DCI event?
Yes.
It's pretty impressive.
It is pretty impressive. On the 18th, the Steve Miller Band at the Amp with Peter Frampton. On the 20th, the Rhythm and Roots Tour with Rascal Flatts at the Amp. I'm tired. On the 22nd, Sunrise Stage is hosting Slade Cleaves.
He's fantastic, by the way.
And that venue is
fantastic.
Yes. On the 25th, the Wheels of Soul Tour with the Tedeschi Trucks Band at the Amp.
Call, see if you can get tickets.
Yeah. Or the free summer concert with Leah and the Mojo Doctors at 7 o'clock at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks in Fayetteville.
There you go.
On the 27th, the Secret Garden opens at Fort Smith Little Theater. On the 28th, The Wedding Singer opens at Arkansas Public Theater in Rogers. On the 28th and 29th, the Peacemaker Music and Arts Festival in Fort Smith with Jamie Johnson and North Mississippi All-Stars and Andy Frasco.
It's a pretty good lineup.
On the 29th, the first of the summer jazz concert series with Kansas City jazz legend Lisa Henry at Sunrise Stage.
She played President Obama's second inauguration.
That ought to get you through July.
Yeah, well, and then some.
And good luck with that.
All right. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
91.3 KUAF is supported by Highlands Oncology Group. Highlands Oncology's cancer specialists provide comprehensive, collaborative care, allowing patients and families to stay close to home. With locations in Benton and Washington counties, Highlands Oncology is helping patients fight the battle every day. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. Tickets are available for the Wheels of Soul 2017 Summer Tour featuring Tedeschi Trucks, the Wood Brothers, and Hot Tuna at the Walmart Amp in Rogers, July 25th. Tickets at ampTickets.com or 443-5600.
This weekend, Northwest Arkansas hosted more than 200 road cyclists from the amateur to the elite. They came from around the country and from around the world, some from as far away as Venezuela and Australia. They were here to compete for $50,000 in cash prizes during the Natural State Criterium Series. The series was in Bentonville on Friday, Rogers on Saturday, and then Springdale yesterday. The entire event was put on by Bike NWA, which works to make the region more bike-friendly. Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek was in Bentonville Friday evening as the races got underway.
Riders ready? Sit. Draw my whistle stop. Go!
Go, here we go. We had a faulty whistle, but now this is whistle. There you go, there's a good whistle.
The riders sprint down the streets of downtown Bentonville and barely slow down as they zoom around the corners. The cheers of the spectators lined up along the race course are accompanied by cowbells, and they add to the energy the riders are carrying with them as they speed by about every 2 minutes.
Criterium racing is the heart of American cycling.
That's Frankie Andreu. He's a former professional cyclist who competed in the Tour de France 9 times and went to the Olympics 2 times. Andreu was the announcer at this weekend's Criterium Series in Northwest Arkansas.
Crit race is usually on a course that's like about 1 kilometer long or under a mile, usually in a downtown venue, and they whip around doing circuits. So it's just like a mini laps, and sometimes you'll have, depending on the category, you could have 70, 80 riders out there flying around curb to curb, going 25, 30 miles an hour. A lot of people compare it to like NASCAR on bikes. It's American kind of street track racing, and so it's exciting. And so crashes happen, a lot of bumping and shoving, but the main thing is the speed. A lot of people are amazed at how fast the guys can fly around the corners.
To win, a rider has to stay with the group on every lap for the duration of the race, which can be anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour based on the category.
You have to cross the line in front of everybody else. And so that's where the strategy comes in, because there's a lot of tactics that play out, because some riders are very strong and they can break away, meaning get away from the group and kind of time trial, go at a steady pace. Other riders are like sprinters, like an Usain Bolt. They're super fast in the last 200 meters. So you have different riders trying to balance that tactics and strategy of how to be able to cross that finish line first, because some guys aren't fast and some guys are. And so they're pitted against each other, and that all takes place out on the roads.
Andreu says that's what makes crit racing as exciting for the spectators as it is for the riders.
Crit racing is dynamic, it's fast, it's like a video game on wheels. It's like you're constantly having to adjust in the move. Road racing it's a different beast. It's a little bit tougher, there's more glamour at the very highest end of the sport, like the Tour. Anybody getting into cycling, anybody who's been racing in the U.S., you have to be able to do Criterium races, and that's kind of what keeps the sport alive here in the U.S.
Before the races started Friday evening, Andreu met with some of the junior riders who make up the local breakaway cycling team. He told them about how he got started racing as a kid.
I'd get to the criteriums, I'd get dropped, I'd try like mad to keep up. It took a long time for me to learn the skills of bike racing, to get the power, the sprint, all of that kind of stuff.
Breakaway Cycling is a nonprofit that officially announced its presence this weekend. Tiffany Dixon is one of the organization's founders. She says the idea grew out of a need for more support for junior cyclists who wanted to compete.
They need a different support. And they need patience and, you know, people just, and then they realize they have to give up their training if they want to train kids and, you know, this whole other support.
Dixon became involved in the sport because of her son. She says it was hard to find the right kind of support for him, not only because he was a junior, but also because he has type 1 diabetes.
Other kids started seeing him on a bike and they started coming out and they would give me their name and I would try to arrange rides for them and try to support however I could from what we'd learned through my older son. And that's kind of how it all started.
Now the team has Custom Electronics as a main sponsor and a grant from the Walton Family Foundation to help offset the costs of team membership and fees for races in the region. Dixon says the more junior riders there are out on the course, the more established the junior racing scene becomes.
How can we proactively work with race directors to make it safe for the kids, to make it fair and equal for the kids, you know, and so they can have fun and experience it, but, you know, develop through the level. If it's something they want to do.
The breakaway team had several of its riders in this weekend's races. Lizzie Graham was out in Bentonville, too, to compete in the women's Cat 3 race later that night.
So I came down here to volunteer, and I have had a bug in my ear all week to race this race. And finally, I had enough, and I said, you know what, if that tire will give me a bike, then I will race. So I walked down to Fat Tire, and I said, hey, I need a bike for a couple hours. And they said, no. And I said, well, I kind of really want to race this race. And they finally, after a little bit of convincing, they told me that they would give me the bike if I agreed to wear their jersey, and they would comp my race if I finished top 5. So I was like, challenge accepted.
Graham spoke with us before her race as the rain came down and storms put the men's Cat 3 race on hold.
I'm very nervous about the rain. I think that anything that will keep me off a road bike, if anything does, it's rain.
Graham says she's a mountain biker and triathlete, so criterium racing is something completely new.
I've been randomly interviewing people along the way, so I've been getting tips from here and there. So I've been told to hang back. I've been told to put it out there until the first person kind of slows down and then get in front because it's better to corner if there's nobody to run into. So I think it's going to be kind of a sink or swim experience for me.
Graham ended up having to pay her own entry fee, but says it was the hardest race she's ever done. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zuzana Sitek.
And as Frankie Andreu mentioned, the Tour de France is underway as well. Other than competing in the Tour himself as part of the U.S. Postal Service cycling team, Andreu's testimony played a key role in the investigation into teammate Lance Armstrong's doping practices. Andreu says there has been a lot of changes in the world of road cycling compared to how it was 15 years ago.
A lot of people were burned on everything that happened, not only with Lance Armstrong, but with the whole era of that sport. And so it was a big learning curve, but everything that was kind of accepted and tolerated back then definitely is not now. And that's from the managers, the press, the fans, the media. It's not accepted. It's not tolerated. No one turns a blind eye to it. In other words, they'll pull that person out and try to, a lot of people trying to clean up the sport.
But he says in cycling, just like in most other professional level sports, there will always be cheaters.
I don't think you can be so naive to just think that everybody is 100% clean. You have to look at the sport, and because the sport brought this upon itself, with a little bit of a weary eye. You know, the biggest change I hope that has come around is that it really gives an opportunity for younger riders that are coming up in the sport that they don't have to feel the pressure that they have to dope or that there's the need to dope, that they can actually race against others and race clean to make it a level playing field.
Andreu, by the way, is pretty familiar with Northwest Arkansas. Before the Natural State Criterium Series, he says he's been here for several Joe Martin stage races as a cycling team manager. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals are finishing up a road swing through Texas today with a rare weekday summer afternoon game. The Nats lost in San Antonio last night, 6-1. After today's game, the Naturals will travel back to Springdale to host Tulsa Wednesday night at Arvest Ballpark. A former Northwest Arkansas Natural is scheduled to participate in the annual Major League Baseball Home Run Derby tonight in Miami. Mike Moustakas, currently second in the American League with 25 home runs, will be one of 8 sluggers at the event tonight, seen on ESPN. The next edition of the American Diabetes Association Arkansas Tour de Cure will add a mountain biking component to the annual race. The race, set for next month, will start at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville and include miles along Bella Vista's Blowing Springs and Back 40 trails. The routes include both paved roads and soft surface trails. The race is Saturday, August 19th. Registration is open at diabetes.org/ArkansasTour. Tickets for the first women's basketball season at the University of Arkansas with Mike Nabors as the head coach are now on sale. The team will have seven players returning from last year's squad. Nabors was named the new head coach in the spring after most recently leading the Washington Huskies. He took that program to the NCAA Final Four in 2016. An Arkansas native, he's previously been the head coach of Bentonville High School and an assistant coach at the University of Arkansas. Tickets are available at ArkansasRazorbacks.com. The 2020 college football season is a few autumns away, but the schedule for the Arkansas Razorbacks is being finalized for that year. Last week, it was announced Arkansas would face Notre Dame for the first time ever in 2020, playing the Fighting Irish in South Bend, Indiana. Now, Arkansas is announcing the addition of a non-conference home game to the 2020 schedule. The Razorbacks will host Kent State on September 5th, 2020. That's a mere 1,152 days from today.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Open that door, Richard. Hey, Richard, open the door.
The catchphrase, open the door, Richard, maybe little remembered today, but it caught hold in American vernacular in the mid-1940s and spread like wildfire. And rhythm and blues pioneer Louis Jordan of Brinkley and Monroe County, heard here, can take some of the credit or blame for the phrase. It all stems from a comedy stage routine done by comic James Mason and perfected by Clinton Dusty Fletcher, but possibly dating back even further. Fletcher plays a drunkard coming home after a night of partying, only to discover he's lost his house key. Inebriated quips are occasionally punctuated with knocking and Fletcher yelling for his roommate, Richard, to open the door. The first musical version of this comedy bit was done by sax player Jack McVeigh, formerly of Lionel Hampton's band.
Well, he don't know who he's throwing out of his joint. I go back in his joint and bust it down to the ground. Open the door, Richard! Hey, Richard, open the door!
Louis Jordan charted Open the Door, Richard, in spring 1947, already months into the trend. In fact, New York radio station WOR banned any version of the song that year and even asked comedians to cease doing Richard material. Jordan's song version of Open the Door, Richard, incorporates much of the actual comedy routine into the song. Some of Dusty Fletcher's choice lines, as spoken by Louis, include, I'm going to drink to everyone's health until I ruin my own. The market became crowded with versions of the song, including by Count Basie, Hot Lips Page, and Jimmy Durante. Jack McVeigh quickly changed the name of his band to The Door Openers and recorded a flop Open the Door, Richard follow-up called The Keys in the Mailbox. The song's sketchy origins and quick ubiquity meant a lawsuit was in order. Dusty Fletcher and John Mason were given lyrical credit. Dusty Fletcher and Don Howell were given musical credit, although no one seems to know who Don Howell is. Some of the song versions didn't use any of the Open the Door, Richard comedy routines, but only the refrain of Open the Door, Richard. A version by Walter Brown with a Tiny Grimes sextet underscores the popularity of Open the Door, Richard. Richard answers out the window to the scene below. Everyone starts hollering at me to open the door. Phil Harris, Bing Crosby, Jack Benny. If I won't open the door for them, damn if I'll open it up for you, he says, asking, why can't you give a man a little peace? The answer is, that's what you've been getting. Open the door and give us a little peace. In this risque version, at the end, they discover the door has been unlocked all along.
Open the door, Richard! But I hate to be caught out on the street like this, because it makes you look so common. And I know I ain't common, because I got class I ain't never used yet. But I guess I better get on in the house, because I don't want my pastor to catch me out like this. Hey, Richard! Open the door!
Comedian Dusty Fletcher got into the music recording act, too, issuing his own version of Open the Door, Richard, on National Records with Jimmy Jones and his band. The record label calls Fletcher the originator. Side two of the record incorporates the longer part of the stage routine, where Fletcher tries to gain entry with a ladder and gets beat up by a policeman. In 1945, Dusty Fletcher starred in a short film version of the Richard routine that helped solidify the popularity of the phrase.
It was directed by William Forrest Crouch, who directed many of Louis Jordan's film vehicles. Using some broad black American stereotypes, Fletcher runs through the entire routine wearing Burt Williams-styled oversized shoes, white gloves, and a top hat, from getting kicked out of the bar, going home, to the very physical bits with the ladder and the cop. A film sequel, Answer to Open the Door, Richard, was also made, starring Stephen Fetchit. Why wouldn't Richard open the door there? Nothing salacious, but just another stereotype. Fetchit was too lazy. White hot through the mid-1940s, Open the Door, Richard has lived on. People of a certain age named Richard can attest to the number of times they've been asked to open the door. The phrase is referenced in separate Looney Tunes cartoons featuring Foghorn Leghorn and Yosemite Sam, among countless other media references. Beyond its many versions in English, the song has been recorded in several different languages. Rockabilly performer Billy Lee Riley of Pocahontas in Randolph County recorded it for Sun Records in Memphis, Tennessee in late 1957. Louis Jordan's version is one of several Jordan songs featured on the soundtrack to the Mafia II video game, released in August 2010. In 1967, Bob Dylan and the band recorded a song called Open the Door, Homer. However, the song's refrain is actually Open the Door, Richard, I've heard it said before. Fairport Convention, Thunderclap Newman, and other bands of that era recorded Homer. The song appeared on Bob Dylan and the band's basement tape albums, although Arkansas-er Levon Helm didn't play on most of the basement tape sessions. The phrase Open the Door, Richard became one of several calls of the American Civil Rights Movement and racial integration battles of the 1950s and 60s as doors previously closed were demanded to be opened. With that, and the phrase's origins in minstrelsy, one could say Open the Door, Richard has come full circle. Here in its entirety is rhythm and blues pioneer Louis Jordan of Brinkley in Monroe County with the song Open the Door, Richard, only one part of the extensive Open the Door, Richard catchphrase phenomena.
I met old Zeke standing on the corner the other day. That cat sure was booted with liquid.
He was what?
He was obnoxicated.
He was what?
He was inebriated.
He was what?
Well, he was just plain drunk.
Well, all right, then.
He sure was salty with the bartender. The bartender's trying to make him buy another drink. Zeke told the bartender, ain't no need of me buying no drinks when everybody else is buying them. I'm gonna drink to everybody's health till I ruin my own.
Open the door, Richard!
Why, he don't know who he's throwing out of that joint. Why, I'll go back in that joint and take a short stick and bust it down to the ground.
Open the door, Richard!
But I hate to be caught out on the street like this, cause it makes you look so common. And I know I ain't common, cause I got class I ain't never used yet. But I guess I better get on in the house, cause I don't want my pastor to catch me out like this.
Hey, Richard, open the door!
Now look at that old woman across the street, done stuck her head out of the window, calling her sister. Look at her hunching her sister, saying, ain't that him? Ain't that him? Yes, it's me, and I'm drunk again! I know he's in there because I got on the clothes. They can't throw him out because I owe just as much back rent here as he does. Imagine that old woman charging us $3 a month and getting mad because we 12 months in the arrears. Come meet me last Thursday saying, ain't you boys going to give me some back rent? I told her she'd be lucky if she got some front rent. I'm standing here scratching in my pants pocket and standing here groping in my coat pocket and standing here feeling in my shirt pocket and I can't find the key. Hey, open the door, Richard!
Louis Jordan of Brinkley, Monroe County with Open the Door, Richard, part of the Open the Door, Richard catchphrase phenomenon of the mid-1940s and well beyond. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook. With Arkansas songs.
Richard, why don't you open that
Arkansongs is a production of Experiment Station Studios. Executive producer is Keith Merks. Arkansongs is underwritten by the Old Statehouse Museum in Little Rock, a museum of the Department of Arkansas Heritage. Arkansongs, since 1998.
This is 91.3 KUAF, and from the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large. As Becca Martin Brown from the Northwest Arkansas Democrat pointed out earlier this hour, no shortage of events worth our attention in July. Such is the schedule around here that we've assembled a further collection of more items with something in common: entertainment and information in unexpected places. For example, movies at a library or at an aquatic park. The Fort Smith Public Library will screen Larry Foley's latest documentary, The Favored Strawberry, tomorrow night at 7. The film was shot in 8 different states, including Arkansas and Oklahoma. Larry will be at the screening tomorrow night at the Fort Smith Public Library. DVD copies of the film will be made available. The film Finding Dory will be shown at the Springdale Aquatic Center Friday night. Gates open at 7:30 for the absolutely free movie. And Finding Dory itself will begin at dusk Friday night. That's about 8:30. Popcorn and beverages will be available. The Springdale Aquatic Center is at 1100 Watson Drive. Opera in the Ozarks will be staging Jack in the Beanstalk on an unexpected stage at the Bentonville Public Library Thursday afternoon at 2. The matinee is presented for free. No registration is required. You can find out more at bentonvillepubliclibrary.edu. We should know by now that nothing is truly unexpected from Artist Laboratory Theater. Still, conversations about Cars at the group's theater is probably a first. Cars is, though, the subject for the next All You Need to Know show that will take place Sunday evening at 7. Concept is pretty simple. Musicians, writers, poets, and others will sing, discuss, and consider all things Cars at the Artist Laboratory Theater space at 1030 South College in Fayetteville. The program will be recorded for a future broadcast on KUAF's Sunday night service that you can hear every Sunday night at 7 on 91.3. Jerry Sloan may be best known as a musician and a music educator for years at the University of Arkansas, but he's also quite the poet. The Ozark Poets and Writers Collective welcomes back poet Jerry Sloan, 7 o'clock Tuesday, July 25th. This will take place at Nightbird Books in downtown Fayetteville. Jerry Sloan is now retired from the U of A, but he'll read from his brand new book, Crossings, a Memoir in Verse. Admission free. If you'd like more information about the Ozark Poets and Writers Collective, ozarkwriters.wordpress.com. And I doubt you'd expect the National EMU Convention to be near here, but on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Springfield, Missouri, and the Oasis Hotel will be the host for the American EMU Association's annual gathering. The focus of the convention is facing today's challenges. Topics will include industry status, profitability, business opportunities, marketing, benefits of EMU oil, EMU oil trade rules, and EMU oil certification. You can find out more at AEA, think American EMU Association, AEA-EMU.org.
The Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, the region's daily newspaper, offers local news where we live, play, and work in Benton and Washington counties. It's one newspaper for one region. The Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, online at NWADG.com. Opera in the Ozarks continues its 67th summer season through July 21st with 4 weeks of performances at Inspiration Point in Eureka Springs and Arend Arts Center in Bentonville. It features nearly 50 vocalists from across the nation performing Mozart's The Marriage of Figaro, Bizet's Carmen, and Carlisle Floyd's Susanna. Tickets and schedule at opera.org.
Tomorrow on Ozarks, our conversation with Springdale Mayor Doug Sprouse. He's serving as the president of the Arkansas Municipal League, and he'll talk about how cities are uniting to consider different matters, including collection of internet sales tax. That's tomorrow at noon and 7 on 91.3. A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Frogtown. Yes, Frogtown in Sebastian County. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. Another brand new show tomorrow.